Rav Volpe points out that the Betzim, there are two really different kavim which are taking place during Elul. There's the kav which reaches from Rosh Chodesh Elul till Rosh Hashanah, and there's another kav which reaches from Rosh Chodesh Elul until Yom Kippur. The flow from Rosh Chodesh Elul to Yom Kippur is the flow of Tshuva. The flow of Rosh Chodesh Elul until Rosh Hashanah is Malchus. It's about some two different avodas. There's the avoda of Malchus, Kabbalah al Malchus Shammai, and then there's the avoda of Tshuva, which that's some two different avodas. That being said, Chazal look at the Aseret Yemei Tshuva and they see Rosh Hashanah is the first 2 days of Aseret Yemei Tshuva. So I mean, there's an element of Tshuva which is specific to Rosh Hashanah. I'll put out a challenge to you, which I don't have a good answer to yet, but. The Rashi in the beginning of Yeshaya brings that in the Nevuah of Chazon, there are the shadness of Rachatzo Hizaku, Siru Malalechem, etc. Rashi says there's 10 shadness over there. It corresponds to the Seretz Yemei Tshuva. So I'm trying to figure out which Lashon fits to which, to Rosh Hashanah, which fits to Yom Kippur, what, etc. So I don't know. See if you can work that out. So, in what sense is Rosh Hashanah a chelik of the Avodas HaTshuva? So, the simple understanding is that the real Avodas HaTshuva is to come back to relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, which Rosh Hashanah is kaveya that relationship. But maybe there's another nekuda which we can focus on. Rabbi Tversky, in a lot of his works, he talks about the 12 steps. That's the area which he worked on, etc. He worked with addictions, etc. So one of the clues which he talks about again and again is that for people truly to be motivated to change and truly to really change, they have to hit rock bottom. And all of the tshuva svarim, you know, the svarim about tshuva, you know, who use the 12 steps, tell you, let's try and hit rock bottom before we hit rock bottom. You know, that's always like the nusach, right? Right? How do you hit rock bottom before you hit rock bottom? I was zoicha to, I guess, if you don't know the right word for that. I once attended had a relative who was in AA, and the therapist felt that it would be beneficial for this relative to have family members join them. So I once went to attend an AA meeting. It was very fascinating. The speaker was a fellow named Mr. King, and he was describing rock bottom. So his issue was alcoholism, and he lost his wife, lost his house, crashed his car, ended up in the hospital, right? Almost lost his life, broken bones all over, etc. Right? And he was describing how he decided to be sober again and again and again. Each time it didn't work. So finally, he hit the point where he couldn't go any. The next step down is 6 feet under, and that's he decided he has to change, and he's been sober X amount of days, X amount of years, etc. That was the speaker. Apparently, each meeting they have somebody who's been sober, they have him speak, and he's describing what it was like. And like how he decides he's not going to drink anymore, and then he just takes one drink, and then one drink becomes multiple drinks. Then, you know, he said he had this very, you know, the neighbors knew he had a drinking problem. They knew that he was like overcoming it, and he was getting better. And then, you know, he would have to take all the bottles out to the garbage, to the corner. Right? He says, and the noise of the bag clinking with all the bottles. He says, it's clinking and it's clinking and it's clinking. I'm saying, stop clinking, stop clinking. Nobody has to know what I'm doing wrong, you know, like, you know. And I can, you know, like, that was his. So finally he hit the bottom. So you don't get real change until you really want to change. If you don't want to change, you're not going to change. So a person hits that point in his life where there's nowhere else to go, so he has a choice. He can just say, I can't do it, and give up. And, you know, just coast and see what happens and hope, you know, till the end. Or a person really changes. It has to be uncomfortable to change. Rabbi Tversky has his mushel, a pearl. So really, the mushel drove me crazy. So I'm going to do it to you. He says, how do you make a pearl? Well, how do you make a pearl? It says you put a little grit of sand inside of an oyster. And the oyster really doesn't like it. It really bothers it. It irritates the body of this very soft tissue of the actual oyster. Right? So it's able to secrete a liquid which coats it. And it's nice and smooth and soft. And it covers it again and again until it feels that it's nice and smooth and soft. And that's a pearl. So he says, as you see, by having difficulty, you grow, etc. Like, you know, it's a great motion. What does it do with my life? Translate that into my life. I have no idea how to translate it into my life. It's a nice shtickle Torah, but what does it do with me? If a person would take Rosh Hashanah seriously, Rebbe Gifter was one time talking to us. She was talking about how she remembers Elul in Tells. She says, you know what, I have to tell you, so nowadays they're a lot firmer nowadays than they used to be. Yerushalayim, they had more Yerushalayim then. She says, during Elul, you saw the city changed. Most of the shopkeepers closed their business after midday, and they went to learning yeshiva for half a day. People walked around for daigud. There was a pachad of the Yom HaDin. Pashar pachad of the Yom HaDin. He says, I don't see it anymore. We know a lot more halacha. Says they weren't so makbid on halacha. A lot of things, they were, you know, they were amaratzi. They weren't necessarily makbid on the halacha. It says even the pruma, you know, the women covering their hair in litta wasn't a big thing. The hakpadas of tznius, etc. We're much firmer now. It says, but Yir Shemaim, the pacha, what it means, the very Olam from Velt, and he has expectations from us, it's gone. There's a maisa with the Nevardarka that during the Russian Revolution, so the Reds, a lot of them were Jews, so when the whites would capture a Jew, they assumed that he was a Red, and they would kill him. So he was caught. Now he had no shaykh, because the communists, of course, hated the yeshiva bachur anyway. So if the communists catch you, you'd be killed. If the whites catch you, you'd also be killed. Either way, he was going to be killed. But he was caught by one of them, and they took him to a firing squad. They put him up against the wall by the firing squad. You know, it was a kangaroo court that decided he was spying on them, and he has to be killed. Put him up against the court, against the wall. They count down. They say, fire. The guns misfire. He survives. He's trying afterwards. He gets back to his chaver. He's trying to describe to them the pachad of that moment. They're counting down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Fire. The pachad of that moment when he knows his life is about to end. He's trying to find words to describe what it means. That moment of pachad. So he says, it was me'ain the pachad of Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur. That's what it meant 80 years ago, that a Yid had a pachad of Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur, to the point that a firing squad is me'ang in the pachad of Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur. We have no shaykhs to it. If a person understands that Chayav, B'nei Beisoy, everything is dependent on the din of Rosh Hashanah, Rabbeisai, that's the frum version of rock bottom. We can't continue as this. This is not acceptable. We can't be, this is not the way we're supposed to be. So why is it that alcoholics seem to do it better than us? It's very simple. Alcoholics are dysfunctional. And we look at ourselves as functional. So we have a society which has a standard. And based on the standard of society, we look normal. Take us and put us in a society of very, very big tzaddikim, and we will live. Move us to, I don't know, they make a kiryav, it's called kiryav tzaddik, you have to have credentials to move in. And somewhere they made a mistake and they put you in there. Everybody gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning and they daven, like, you know, a 3-hour davening, and then they never say a word of Lashon Hara, right? And they're always they always smile and say hello to you, right? And they learn like 17 hours every single day, and they do a parnasa for like 3 hours, and while they're being miyachid yehudim, and they live on mamish, he stopped getting to the You start feeling very uncomfortable after a while, that you talk weird. You're not normal. You got to change. But Rav Hashem and his wisdom stuck this in a place where the people don't walk around with a smile on their face all the time, and they talk. They work 17 hours, and they learn maybe an hour at best while they're falling asleep. You know, because he's got enough learning. But they learn somewhere that falling to the top of Gomorrah hastes didn't learn. And, you know, I don't know. Like, I look pretty normal. I like not only normal. I'm like a better gross than tzaddik. So we have to change. So when Chazal said "Tikkina Sefer Tarba Chochma," and you know we've given the shmuzin over the year that "Tikkina Sefer Tarba Chochma" is very dangerous, and because it can affect your self-esteem, and it could the guy gets all that being true. The point is, why are you comfortable where you are? The point of "Tikkina Sefer," the point of "Tikkina," the Rishonim said, the Chazal said, it's a maila. The goal of that is to make you uncomfortable. Mehecha tesi that I'm where I'm supposed to be. So yes, if I surround myself with people which are bigger than me and better than me, I'm going to have different musagim. So that's uncomfortable. So the solution is don't do that. It's called the stick your head in the sand approach. I don't have to change because I'm not so bad. Horai and people, the guy next to me, you know. I come at 7:52 for David. He comes at 7:55. It's a gross tzaddik. Why don't you sit next to the guy who comes at 7:35? Because that's uncomfortable. So now I don't have to change. So we stick our heads in the sand. So Rosh Hashanah says, stop it. You can't stick your head in the sand anymore. There's a din. Rosh Hashanah says, say, where are you? Ayeka. Are you now? And the Rosh Hashanah says, I'll do you a favor. I'll judge you by yourself. I don't need to judge you against anybody else. I got to judge you against you. And against you, you could do better. You could do better. And I gave you a neshama, and I expected more of you. And this is not a Musa Shmuz from your Rebbe, from the Rosh Hashiva, from the Gadol Hador. It's a Musa Shmuz from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, by the way, the decision whether you get another year of life is also totally in that decision. So it's uncomfortable. So we don't like giving shmuzim which are uncomfortable nowadays, because that, you know, because it's not nice to bakrim, because the or to non-bakrim, because we're cream puffs. Another Golden one time he says bakrim nowadays are like tissue paper. You blow your nose at them one time and it falls apart. You know, I'm the recipient of that line also. Don't worry. You know, I was inured to it to some extent in Tel Zeshiva. In Tel Zeshiva, they never said never. But 90% of the shmuzin were intense. Burning a Gehenna was a phrase which was used in the shmuz more than once. Right? I don't think I've ever told you guys you're burning a Gehenna yet. We should do that once in a while. That would be good for you. When we so the Yetzer Hara, so how do you get a musakim? How do you get a musakim? So Taka, one of the miles, he said in the book, what happens if you take a bucker out of a high school? They're idealistic. They want to grow. They want to change, etc. He said you put them in Eretz Yisrael, and you see them that there's another level. That's what happens. If you would keep them in, you give them all the musakim in the world, but they don't see it that it's real, that it can happen. It's very hard to integrate it. They have to integrate in the reality that, you know what, I could do this too. So they put it in a place where a lot of people are doing it, so they do it. They come back to America, and it's very hard to sustain it to some extent. Because it's very hard to do it on your own. But the Maaseh Rishon says, at the end of the day, you're just levadai, all by yourself. When we started investing in the yeshiva, or it's a swarm, when we came here, there was about 8 shelves worth of Svarim, 9 shelves worth of Svarim. There was some Hebrew books that somebody had donated to Yeshiva, which had no shaykhs to being Svarim. Her Baron cleared them out and threw them into the garbage, which is where they belonged. One of the English teachers found the holy book and pulled it out of the garbage, gave it back to Rabbi Lapiansky, because, you know, I found your holy book in the garbage. It was a novel of a in modern Hebrew, So that was the musagim here, right? We started buying Svarim. So over the last 24 or 5 years, we've invested in a few Svarim since we started. You might have noticed. Listen, everybody has an addiction. mine happens to be the buying Svarim, you know. One thing we invested in was Gedolim's books. So Yetzirah is very nice. Yetzirah decided to make Art Scroll something to be cynical about. Art Scroll, you know, for the Gemaras, you're not cynical about the Gemara. Maybe once in a while, but you know, for the most part, not. But the Gedolim story, it's an Art Scroll Gedolim story. It's like it's whitewashed. It's, you know, it's not true. What's the purpose of that? This way, you won't be inspired by it. That's the purpose of it. The whole Tachlis of the Sun is about it. Right. So what do you do if you have a book which is 98% accurate, 2% not accurate? You make fun of 2%, mail it. You're not spoiled from it. That's the Yetzer Hara's answer. But Rabbi Aaron Nebuch, with all of his cynicism that he has, he was the one who told me we should buy Art Scroll Gedolim. He said what turned him on was the biographies of Gedolim. It opened his mind to Musagim, that there's a great world out there, and there's this thing you can accomplish. So when we originally bought, I bought two of each. There's two Rebbe Chanans, there was two Rebbe Moshes, two Rebbe Yaakovs. It's hidden somewhere. I don't even know where it is anymore. Like, you know, some of them, the people were so inspired, they walked away with the book and never brought it back. It was very inspiring. Rush was very mocked. But in Gesell, you know, that was part of the stories, you know. So, I don't know, basically, you know, we can do it again. I just recently picked up, now in the summer, I was tasked with this phenomenal job of cleaning up the whole back of the small base medrash and the whole locker, the whole trailer. Like, spent I don't know how many hours. I should chart build a yeshiva for it. Anyway, it's not fair. You know, like, you know, the poor buckler is like waiting for me to make a decision on the safer. I'm looking, well, this is interesting safer. It's a good cash. Like, you know, it was a slow process. But along the process, I picked up this book called Shloime. Who read it? Shloime Gross. Shloime Gross. An ADD wild kid who became a real Ben Tur. That's the book. He was a big veer. I saw the cynicism. Such a reason why he had to give a biography because he paid for it. Okay. We were going to the cynicism. Move on with it. Stop it already. Grow up. He's a person just like you who discusses the musig that he gave a musig shmuz to one of his friends, stop staring at a woman. He finished with Masechtos. He changed his life. He went from being a kid which pushed it, that the yeshivas couldn't contain him because how wild he was, to the person who his hanoah life was davening and learning. While he was a balabas who gave away millions of dollars of stock. So what's my argument? I can't do that? So the solution is to be cynical, so it doesn't affect me. I once heard from one of my rebbeim, and he said, "Mei Techachas, what do you mean Mei Techachas? Mei Musa Shmuzan or Mei Musa Shmuzan your Makabo? Might take 1,000 to get me a couple 100. Says one Latzanis can do all of that. That's a powerful Latzanis. Because it's uncomfortable. He's not some extraordinary, he's not a merchant, the Gedolim story, which starts when he was 5 years old, he finished his first Masechta. When he's 7, he made it to Siman Shas. Right? That doesn't help us. This is mere Nishnagaya. The stories about how much they struggled, they don't write them. You know why? It's not partially not simple and halachically you're allowed to write them. It's called Lashon Hara. So I'm not going to tell you the story about how many times that Ramesha finds it was baffled during Seder. I have no idea. It's none of my business and I have no right to write it. I would help you. It's a good kasha. I don't have a solution for that problem, but I can't do that. So the reason why the stories are not there is not because they didn't exist. It's because halachically you're allowed to write them. Okay, now what? But over here in this book, apparently, they wrote all the stories, all of the bad stories at the beginning also. So great, you really get the Geshmaka stories. And you see a person can change. So what about me? What about me? What about me? How much am I growing? How much am I changing? How much am I moving forward? How much am I challenging myself? How much am I realizing that it's not acceptable where I am? How much am I going to stand in the din on Monday morning? The person's judging. What am I going to say? What are we going to say? Am I really, did I use the last year well? The person says, you know, you're coming asking for another year. Well, a review, all right? Well, let's see what you did. Well, you blew through, you gassed another million. What did you do with the first million? I recently picked up autobiography, a person very, very close to my heart. I didn't know him at all, come out at all. I'm very close to the son. I'm reading the stories about, he's not, you know, that's Adam Gadol, Adam Oyd, etc. He was a regular down-to-earth person, but he had sensitivity. The kudos of the saber was very much of a sensitivity. Tremendous sensitivity of picture's understanding of people. I started reading it now. We read it by supper together with the family. An average person, no, Yishkan Grayson, but the Muslim, he had a very special mother. You don't have to be this extraordinary person to grow, be in a growth mode. But the way Rosh Hashanah forces us to stop and take an honest look, and this is not, and make us uncomfortable. Person says, you know, I don't like davening yeshiva during Rosh Hashanah because it's a little bit too intense. It makes me uncomfortable. And I understand them. It's talking makes them uncomfortable. The goal of that davening is to make you uncomfortable. Now, as far as I'm concerned, compared to the davening it tells, this is like, you know, this is like really geschmack, right? But for where this person was coming from, it makes him uncomfortable. Rosh Hashanah, the goal of Rosh Hashanah is I want you to be uncomfortable. I want you to be forced to stop and think, are you really happy with where you are? And if you're not, the same way the alcoholic gets that by comparing himself to society and see he's dysfunctional. Once he's really uncomfortable, he's going to change. So we don't want you to, we're not dealing with physical dangers, we're dealing with spiritual dangers. But from the spiritual vantage point, for all I know, we look worse than alcoholics. I don't know. Maybe I can taste it, we're better than that. From the vantage point of the malach, you're looking at us, it's like, you know, God, these guys are driving themselves into the wall every day and smashing their cars. What's the difference in us and the alcoholics? Vis-a-vis from the vantage point of what the malach looking down, Mishra says, you know, these human beings are absolutely crazy. Mom is crazy. They're given the Gemalding and the Shamas, Nishmash Yisrael. They're closer than the Malachim, and they're playing video games. From the vantage point of the Malachim, we look stupider and more ridiculous than Mr. King, taking his bottles and going clinking, clinking, clinking out to the garbage. So, I wanted to share with you a Keser Malchus from the Shabbat Ibn Gavril, but it's not time. Maybe next time we'll do that. The goal is of Rosh Hashanah is to expand our hasagas, not to rationalize, force us to take an honest look at ourselves and say, we're not happy with where we are, honestly. Okay, now what are you going to do to change it? The word of the Sarasim Yeshuva is, okay, now that sunk in a really painful way, to the point that I want to do something about it, what are you going to do about it? In that sense, Rosh Hashanah is extremely necessary part of the Sarasim Yeshuva. It's that which is going to be the motivation to force us to do an honest change in our lives. Bez Hashem.